This is a Glassbox Media podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we talk to well-known guests about their lives, their careers, and navigating and negotiating those difficult moments along the way. I'm Giles Perry Phillips, and with me is Jim Daly.
Hello to you. How are you doing?
I'm all right, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, actually. Yeah, not too bad at all. Busy, lots going on, but all good stuff. But yeah, feeling right at the moment.
Good.
Yeah, what about you? Feeling good, in a good space?
Well, it's now the summer holidays,
right. So
it's nice to relax a little bit more. I mean, I'm still working, yeah. But it's nice to have a bit more relaxation.
Yeah, definitely. I think you've earned it.
Thanks. I don't know if I have.
Yeah, you have. You've earned it. Well, everyone's earned it.
Well, we talk about this on the podcast. What we're so good at... Because, you know, like as Callie Beaton said on the last episode a couple of times ago, that clearly this bit is unscripted, which it is.
Yeah.
But often we do end up talking about things that are in the podcast, weirdly. And we did talk about this with our amazing guest today, which is Keema Bob.
Yeah.
And we talk about, like, having more rest. As creative people, we don't rest enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it came up really early in the episode, I think. Like, we sort of got into it really quickly on this one.
Yeah.
But you're right, we do. I mean, yeah, Keema was talking about we were talking about the balance, weren't we, of like working on stuff but having a break to then give yourself the brain power to think about stuff to then work on and all that balance and stuff. So yeah, it's almost like we script these intros. I mean, maybe we should say they are and people could
scripts they write.
Yeah, they'd find us out quickly.
How do they script it so solid that it sounds like they're making it up on the spot? They're geniuses.
If only they knew.
Yeah. But no, it was a really fantastic episode. Big fans of Keema. Obviously, we met Keema when we did our one and only live performance of the podcast, which, you know, lovely to be able to do some more live ones, but obviously we haven't been able to see that over the last few years. But yeah, so we got to meet Keema, introduced us on stage. And and just been sort of following her work ever since. And she's fantastic comedian, stand-up and actress, and is doing a really, really remarkable new podcast as well, which she talked to us about.
Yeah, so meeting her was one of those moments where you're just like, oh, thank goodness this person sort of come into my life, because she was just absolutely lovely. And we just connected with her so well. And she really helped us. I was quite nervous as I'm doing that live show, that live podcast first and today only, but she was really great at getting us ready for that, so you could tell she was a sort of compassionate person. And then so obviously we just been planning to get her on ever since, but she's gone from strength to strength since that was what, 3 years ago. And yeah, she's doing a lot of incredibly funny but a lot of very important work as well. So her podcast Fock It Up, which is part of the Females of Colour live show that she does, it turned into a podcast, really important, really fascinating and interesting, and obviously ultimately very funny production as well. So she's doing great things, but it was just lovely talking to her. I knew she'd be a great guest, and she's very sort of a deep thinker, but very funny, and she's got a very interesting story as well. And I think we'll save this bit for the patrons, but the story around what happened to her at Latitude.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah, it's really funny because obviously we only met on a day, but she arrived a bit earlier and ended up staying at someone very, very famous's house, but we won't reveal who that was. But it was, a remarkable story, really. And she must have had quite a whirlwind weekend.
Yeah, it's crazy. I didn't even know that. So we're going to save that for our patrons. So join our patron, patreon.com/plankpodcast, to find out that. Well, of course, we do extra content with all our guests each week, so do sign up for that. It's £2.50 a month, which is not much at all for bonus content from all our guests every week on the blank podcast. Before we get into it, should we do some tweets, which I remembered to do this week because I think I forgot last week.
Well, I I've got a message on LinkedIn, of all places.
Oh.
It's one of those sort of forgotten about sort of social media kind of sites, isn't it?
Oh, poor LinkedIn.
I mean, I think there's quite a lot of people do use LinkedIn.
They have. I mean, we've done adverts for them, and we'd happily do them again.
Yeah, well, I mean,
LinkedIn is a fantastic platform.
Yeah, well, I've delved back into LinkedIn more recently, and I quite like it. And there's some really positive affirmations being put about on there, and I like
it. That's good. Yeah, That's good. Again, never say no to a bit of positivity.
Well, because it's a sort of business, more business minded, isn't it? And work and employment kind of minded. You'd think it would be a bit more cutthroat, but it's not. It's a very, very nice place to be. Anyway,
that's good. Yeah. I'm not a business person, but I feel like a bit more positivity in business.
Well, I think all types of business as well. There's a lot of creative people on there, which I interact with, so that's nice.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, anyway, sorry, you were going to say.
Well, I've got a lovely message from a guy called Fred Goff, who's, I think, he's a long-standing listener to the podcast, and he sent us a message saying, fantastic as always. This is after listening to the Cali Beaton episode, which has had a lot of people have messaged about, actually. It's been a really, really well-received episode. Anyway, fantastic as always. Keep up the terrific work on this podcast. Always a true delight to listen due to the humility and honesty demonstrated not only by the guests, but also Giles and Jim. Thank you for making this perfect project.
That is a really nice message. Thank you so much. Which says Fred Goff.
Fred Goff, yes.
Fred Goff, great name. And thank you for that. It's a really nice message as well. I've got one here from a regular. So this is from Dr. H, who we haven't mentioned for a bit. But this is an interesting tweet, because Doctor says, after finding Blank Pod when Sophia Miles was on, that's a while back now, I finally managed to work my way through all the available episodes.
Wow.
Yeah, completely.
How many hours is that? Jeez.
That's going to be a lot, isn't
it? Gee whiz. Wow.
That is some serious commitment. But the doctor goes on, problem is, I now only get one a week to look forward to.
Oh, sorry about that.
We wish we could do more a week, but, you know, it's not possible. But thank you for, you know, that dedication for catching up. That's absolutely amazing.
We'd love to hear what some of your favourite episodes are.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, Doctor, let us know what your favourite episodes, Dr. H. And anybody can get in contact, of course. We'd love to hear from you. Our Twitter handle is...
@BlankPod.
And it's the same on Instagram and Facebook as well. So,
yeah, it's the same.
I forgot to do that. Please do get in contact. Let us know if you've completed
LinkedIn.
The back catalog.
You can talk to us on LinkedIn. So I've just got my own profile on LinkedIn, so Giles Pay Phillips. So yeah, you can message on LinkedIn as well.
I don't have my own LinkedIn. I'm not sure.
You must be. You must have your CV on there.
I think I do, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting to look back, because you can look back and see what jobs you were doing in 1995. And...
I was at school in 1995.
Oh, mate. I was at college, to be fair.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, okay. Right, should we crack on with the episode before we go into our work life history?
Yes, I think we should.
Yeah, okay. This is the fantastic, the brilliant, the lovely Kima Bob on the Blank Podcast.
A good day, good time. Just trying to find balance all the time, you know? Like the balance between like taking care of yourself and resting and like pushing forward, you know? I think it's like the curse of being a dreamer, where it's like you want more and the you know, goalpost is always moving, and at the same time it's like, but you got to rest to be able to come up with new dreams.
It's so true. It's so true. And I think it comes up on the pod quite a lot. And then you've constantly got that feeling of guilt, or I certainly do. They're like, oh, I'm not treating myself well enough and resting. And then when you do, you're like, oh, but I'm not being creative and doing stuff. And it's just, never seem to find that sort of place of serenity where you're like, okay, I'm happy in this place for a bit. And this makes sense. I've constantly got those guilty feelings.
I think also like, if you yourself aren't on board with the fact that, like, you deserve rest or you deserve to have a nice time, or also, like, if the people around you aren't on board with the fact that they deserve rest or they deserve a nice time, then you can catch yourself feeling like a little diva, or, you know what I mean, and being like, who do you think you are? You think you're in the position to rest? You want what off? You want to take a day off now? And it's like, no, we should all be getting a day off.
We so need a day off. Like, my wife has to keep telling me to have days off. because and I'm work.
I don't have a wife.
Well, no, I'm
I don't
sorry
have. Yeah.
To tell you to take.
Yeah, so I'm fucked.
I know it is good having that person to tell you to stop, but yeah, I'm because I keep working when I haven't got any work. Which
yeah,
is really
I know what you mean.
Because you,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I have like you know like this last couple of weeks I've been quite quiet work-wise, but I'm still like just on the computer all day trying to do stuff.
Yeah, it's actually it's interesting how like people sometimes really glamorize busyness, and I don't think it's cute. I don't think it's glamorous. And people are like, oh, you keep them busy. Then what I ask now, if I ask someone how they're doing, and if they say they're busy, and then I make sure I go, busy in a way that you like. Yeah. You know, busy in a way that feels nice. Because I think we get it twisted, and it's I get quite mentally busy. Well, there's not like a lot going on outside, yeah, but there's a lot going on inside. Ooh, yeah.
That's I think that is where I'm at most of the time. Is the inside busy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How are we gonna? You got to do that. You got to so busy thinking about how you need to do that. You don't have any energy to do that.
Yeah, completely. Do you know, I was just thinking, actually, when you're talking about, like, meeting people, do you know what would be a good question to say to people?
Because
you're totally right, like, maybe not just not this country, maybe most countries, we really sort of fetishize hard work and hustle.
Yep.
Work harder, work smarter, hustle, all that kind of stuff. It'd be nice if you met someone, and instead of being like, you know, oh, how's work or whatever, I'd be like, how are you? What's making you happy at the moment? Or like, what are you enjoying at the moment?
Yes.
What are you enjoying at the moment?
Honestly.
Then, like, you could talk about stuff you actually like.
Yeah, because we get a lot of, oh, and what do you do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, mind your business. Also, it's tough, I think, as a comic, because I think a lot of people, especially if they haven't, like, if they're not familiar with your work, they just assume that you're like a struggling hobbyist.
Yeah.
And so what do you do for me sometimes puts me in a position to feel like I need, like, not only am I going to have to tell someone that I do this job, but I'm going to have to convince them that I'm secure in it and that I'm good at it. And that's a lot of work. Yeah. That's actually way more than I feel like doing.
Yeah, you're on the back foot initially. Like, right at the start of the conversation, you're sort of like backed into a corner a bit.
Just like, fuck, yeah, like, oh no, what do I do? I'm a scientist, mate. Just keep it vague.
Have you ever lied?
I don't lie, but I do push it along. So, you know, some people, especially like older people, will slip into a bit of a patronization where they go, oh, where do you do your little shows?
little shows.
Or something like that. Yeah, where do you do your little shows? And, you know, or like the occasional like cab driver who's like, you done anything I would have ever seen or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I go, maybe, I don't know what you watch or where do you do your little shows? Oh, just wherever I feel like. Just keep it moving or just push it along. I'm like, I can't get into this. I've had to justify what I do to myself. Now I have to do it to you.
Yeah, oh God, yeah, absolutely.
Give me a break.
I know, absolutely. I tend to just try and avoid... Well, I avoid the question, but then I'll just deviate onto the other person straight away, pretty much. Also, it's really complicated to express exactly what you do, I think, because there's so many facets to what we do. Because as creatives, we're not doing one singular thing generally, are we? We're doing loads of different things. So, yeah, that's difficult as well.
Honestly, like recently, guys... I don't know if you know this, but making a podcast is actually a lot of work.
Yeah.
Have you come across this? I don't know if this is anything. And it's so mad to me because the amount of work it takes, I don't think the average person imagines when they hear the word podcast. Do you know what I mean? And So recently I've launched a new podcast. I'm very excited about it. And what we're doing is we're putting on live shows, recording those live shows, and then editing them down so that they're nice and snappy and can be, like, shared with the world. And so there's the element of having to, like, produce, book, promote live shows. Promotion is evil. I fucking hate it so much. It's the most disgusting thing I've ever had to be a part of in my life. And I went to a Christian college in Texas. It's so bad. So there's that element, and then you're like recording the thing, and then you're trying to figure out what edits you need, etc. And there's so much that goes into it. And then when you tell someone, they're like, what have you been working on lately? And I'm like, oh, I've been making this podcast. They can't hear all that in the word podcast. And then they have the nerve to go, and what else you been working on? And I go, I don't have the time.
Yeah, it's amazing how time consuming it is. I think because Jim and I just make it ourselves, so you know, we kind of share like the editing duties. But yeah, there's all the other stuff, like you say, booking the guests and
promo.
I hate it. I've got a book just come out and I've hated doing any promotion.
Oh gosh. And it's fucked up, right? Because your book, this podcast, they're good things, right? It's not like we're trying to sell fucking, I don't know, do you know what I mean? It's not like we're trying to sell candy where we're like, oh, you gotta have it.
Yeah.
You gotta have it. Trust me, you want it. Like, these are things that would actually bring some kind of joy, enlightenment to people. Like, you want them to have them, but still it feels so cringe being like, ooh, listen to my stuff. Subscribe, like and subscribe, tell a friend. God.
Yeah.
You're so right. It feels horrible. And I think it's obviously probably a lot of creatives' first feeling goes against it, because I think you need to. So, for example, when I was doing, so I'm in the middle of Edinburgh promo at the moment, which is horrendous, and it's just you feel like you're sort of shouting.
You're selling your soul right this minute. I can see the soul drifting out of you.
Honestly, you're also just like, I think it's especially this far out from the fringe. I think it feels a little different when you're in August, where maybe you can see the return, maybe later that day with who like shows up. But I think like this far out, it's kind of like, please come. And a lot of people, especially ticket wise, are buying their tickets like on the day or closer to. I'm so sorry, Jim.
It's also like, because when you're in Edinburgh, like everyone's in that bubble and they expect, they're like, okay, I'm going to be flyered. People are going to promote the show. Great. But you're right, outside of it, it feels a bit icky. And I'm very much the first person who is almost apologetic. So last year when I was promoting my previews, I put on my Facebook page something like, so sorry to do this, guys, but like, I'm promoting my show, or oh, here he is again promoting a show kind of thing. And my wife was like, who's also a performer, was like, don't do that. Like, you might think that, but other people aren't in that same mindset, and they're probably thinking, oh cool, Jim's doing a show, or oh. And as soon as you start apologizing for
it
reflects onto them, but it's so hard.
It is. I posted something recently where I was like, I don't want to be one of those people that's always putting like promo on online. So here's a picture of me looking cute with some promo hidden in there. And someone just said, stop apologizing. What you're doing is fun and lovely, and like, you shouldn't feel ashamed of telling people about it. And I was just like, thank you, one person. But I feel gross, especially when, like, you know, these days I feel like promotion. I have a friend actually called Darkwa, and they are like, I don't know, like a model influencer, just ethereal being. And a lot of their Instagram is branded content, but they do it so artfully. It's I can't even tell you. I'm just like, the amount of work that you've had to put in to telling people to buy this makeup palette, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's not even like cringe or anything gross. Like they'll be like, you know, living in my experience as a non-binary individual, I feel judged. But when I use insert product here, you know, and I'm just like, oh my God. And the visuals that they put with this stuff, and I'm just like, I feel so bad that I'm just like, here's another poster. Please come to my show. Thanks. With like no photos or anything of like my life in between.
But do you think, like, I mean, that is a real art form, I think, doing those kind of promos. And
honestly,
if
you can do them well.
Yeah, definitely. But either way, like, going back to the apologising thing, if somebody already follows you on social media and they've gone to the effort to do that, they're going to like what you have to say, surely. And they're going to like what you have to promote outside of you having to apologise for it.
Oh, it's sad. It's just another leg of the work that I don't think is acknowledged. I don't even know if I acknowledge it within myself, how much energy it takes.
Yeah.
Do you have that? Do you have that where, like, for me, I think I get it from my mom. My mom is a very, like, go, go, go person. And she's the kind of woman that will make, like, a huge to-do list and then will just be like, yeah, and I should be able to do all of that today. And she can't. There's no way. There's no way. There's not enough time. There's not enough energy. And I think I get that from her, where I'll be like, I'll underestimate the time and energy that things take.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, oh, I'm exhausted. Well, why? You just did this, this, and this. And I think I'm always like, yeah, always just really severely underestimating how much energy and time as well, what I do takes. Because when you write it out, it seems kind of like, oh, you know, work on that thing, post those things. And then you're just like, oh, I need a nap. And it's like, have you earned a nap? And it's just like, hey, man, you need one. And now I'm going back and forth about what I have to do to rest.
Yeah,
it is. It's really hard. And also, we don't take into account the energy that's taken out of us if some of those things don't go the way we want them to.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're putting out posts and stuff and they're not quite going how you want, or whatever it might be, or the promotion side of stuff particularly.
Oh,
you know,
I love the hide the like count.
So good, isn't it?
Yeah,
I'm like, thanks, Instagram. Yeah. I will. I had a moment where I posted something the other day. It was an article, and I got interviewed, and I hit the like count, and I had a moment where I almost wanted to undo it because I was like, this is actually performing pretty nicely.
Yeah.
maybe they should see the like count.
Yeah, I've not tried that yet.
It's a
brilliant
thing.
I love it. I wish they would just do it automatically, honestly, because I feel like... I feel like people get discouraged from sharing things or putting things out there based on, you know, what kind of whatever it's getting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. Oh, life.
Yeah, I think, I know, it's weird, isn't it?
Well, and I think also what it makes us do is we start to tailor differently what we're putting out there. So there might be stuff that we really want to put out there because we believe in it. And then because it maybe doesn't get the right recognition, we kind of change the way that we're doing stuff. And I think we, as creatives, we often do that. And that can be detrimental to what we actually want to do.
The actual thing. 1,000%. Like, I had a friend recently who's getting ready to go to the Fringe who did a preview. She was covering for someone. And so it wasn't like her crowd, it was that person's crowd, but her show didn't please that person's crowd, and she walked away with so much doubt about her show, and I had to remind her that you don't need your work to please everyone, and if you start trying to do that, then you'll get further away from who you are, what you like about what you do, and what the people who truly support you like about what you do, because you went to some town and couldn't appease a room full of people who didn't even agree to see you.
Yeah, that's so true. And also, whatever you do in terms of creativity, there is an audience out there who will like it. It's just finding
you
them. But
find
they are
them.
Out there.
Yeah.
They are out there and they will like your stuff. But as you say, some won't. And you can't... you know, you can't be everybody's cup of tea, and that's just...
Mm-mm. And if you are, then what kind of tea are you?
Yeah. That's a fact.
A real mix of yeah. tea. Yeah. A dirty pint of tea.
Yeah,
somehow.
What is that?
That's so true, yeah.
Gosh.
Oh, man. I had a funny thing online this week, actually, where I've started doing these little football sketchy things, and I did one... And all my comedy is very just like gentle. It's not like ranty, right? Very gentle.
Yeah.
And I did one where I just missed the mark a bit, and I was a little bit harsh on this footballer, and loads of people replying saying like, "Oh, this isn't like you. This is a bit. Mm. This feels a bit harsh."
I like this side of you, Jim.
Rip into him.
Yeah. Do it worse. No, it's interesting. They clearly obviously got used to a sort of certain style from me. And I definitely got it wrong. And I thought about taking it down. But instead, what I've done, I don't know if this is the right thing to do or not. I've no idea. But I thought, instead, I'm going to reply to the... No, we never know. Because, like, if I take it down, maybe it's like I'm embarrassed by it. And I am a little bit. But part of me was like, do you know what? I'm going to reply to the comments of people saying this is not like you. And I'm going to say, do you know what? I got this one wrong. So most of the comments, I said, do you know what? Yeah, you're right. I've missed the mark here. I've got this one wrong. I hope he does well. All that kind of stuff. And to be honest, I'm still 48 hours in, so I've no idea if that's going to work or not. Yeah, but it's just interesting.
Do you know sometimes, like, if you don't have a meal before you do something, or if you haven't had enough rest, and then it's like, oh, now all of a sudden I'm a fucking monster.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it just comes down to the human condition.
Yeah.
I was a bit cranky, actually.
Yeah. Maybe I was. I think I was trying to do something really quickly in a moment, didn't have much time, had this idea, thought, oh, I'll do that, did it. So in the moment, didn't really think about it.
Mm.
And then afterwards, it's like, oh, yeah, no, I've slightly...
You've used up a lot of energy replying to everyone as well, haven't you? That's a lot of apologising.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
I have, but I don't know if that's a good thing because I'm showing that I've made a mistake and it's okay to make mistakes and I'm owning it.
Oh, what are you, a human person?
Ugh. Yeah, exactly. How dare you? Ugh. How dare you be a human who's flawed?
Ugh. Get it together. I think it's really interesting, like, the time and space that we're in right now where everyone's trying to figure out how to apologize. Everyone's trying to figure out how to apologize or trying to tread so carefully that they never have to.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, do I open my notes app or, like, what do I do?
It's always notes. It's always
people
a notes
love
app.
A notes app. But, like, it's like, I think it's a very interesting time of this mix of sometimes it's accountability and sometimes it's just... I don't know. I think sometimes it is like accountability and a good thing. And sometimes it just feels like people, I don't know, like prying or seeing if they can get someone to fold. Mm. The internet is a beautiful and dangerous place.
Yeah. Comes up a lot on this podcast, unsurprisingly. It is, what's your relationship like with it? Do you give yourself distance from it or anything like that?
It depends. Like, so I'm not a big tweeter, and sometimes I feel bad because I don't make online content including tweets, and most of the time when I tweet something, I think yesterday I tweeted something like, I'd like to be, I really want to be asleep right now, and the fact that I'm not is a crime. And, you know, it's I'm not just like, ooh, blah, 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 this joke. I'm just like, these are my feelings.
Yeah.
I used to actually tweet a lot more before I started journaling. Now I just keep my thoughts to myself. So sometimes I feel bad that, and also on Instagram, my Instagram has become more professional or promotional, and it's not really like come into my head, come into my life. And I do, I used to enjoy being like come into my head a bit more, but I've been trying to figure out what's going on in my head, but also I think as more people have started to follow me and stuff, I just want to be careful about what I'm putting out there, and not necessarily for like how people see me, but more so how, especially when it pertains to like mental health content, how I could be making people see themselves.
Yeah, I mean, you're clearly a very compassionate person, and that really comes across. And you're,
thanks,
I think,
bro.
You're right. No, but I thought that when we met you as well. I think it's absolutely right to be thinking about the people that follow you, how they might react to stuff, because they are people as well. They're not just numbers on a screen. Mm-hmm. So they obviously will react to stuff in certain ways. So it's all very well you putting your stuff out there and your thoughts and stuff. But you're absolutely right, I think, to have compassion for your followers and stuff.
I remember one time it was quite cold in the UK, and I was in Ghana, and I was having such a nice time, and it was so warm, and I was so full of joy, and I was buying like mangoes off the side of the road and just having the time of my fucking life. And I didn't really post anything about it because I just felt bad, because my friends at home were like, it's dark, I'm sad. You know, when will this freeze end? And I was just like, fuck. Like, I don't want to. Like, yeah, I don't know. So, but I don't know. It's tricky. And then people are mean on the internet. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yeah, there's one or two, isn't there? That are a bit, yeah.
Just a couple one of or them. Two. Just a couple. Like, I have the word voice muted on Twitter.
Really?
Because when I do certain like TV programs and go on certain platforms, Radio 4 is like notorious for it in my experience. People are like, ah, this is horrible. And they always feel the need to like mention me, to at me. And it's like, just, I'm not a person that Googles my name. You could just not at me. Yeah. Like, say your hateful shit, but you don't have to bring it into my mentions, bro. Like, I'm sorry that you think I've ruined your day, but why do you insist on trying to ruin mine? I went on House of Games, and people were really nasty, and other people who were on the show, like, had to tweet, like, why are you doing this? Like, they're like, why are you doing this? And Richard even sent me a message, and he was like, I'm sorry about this, Kima, but if it helps, you know, so many people have tuned in to this episode and seem to really like it. And it's just like, yeah, I don't know. It's so much hate and energy out there.
Yeah, you're so right about them bringing it into your space, because, like, I completely agree. Like, if someone doesn't like what I do, tweet about it, whatever. You can say, oh, this gem did, the guy's not funny, he's an idiot, whatever. But there's no need to, like, put it in, reply to me, or, like, quote tweet me. And, like, what?
Yeah.
That's a different level of almost, like, sociopathism.
I feel like people, when you're on the other side of a screen, or on the other side of audio, when you're not in their face, I think they forget that you're also a person. Yeah. Or they think that you've put yourself in the position where it's like receiving hateful shit is not a part of my job. That's not a part of my job description.
Yeah.
I mean, this is controversial for a stand-up, I don't even feel like people heckling is a part of my job. Like, I think that's you fucking with me doing my job.
Yeah,
I agree.
You know, I'm just like, shut the fuck up. But yeah, so I think it's weird. Like, people think, and I don't know if they think that we're rich or something. Like, I don't know what the fuck people think, where they're like, you can take it. You have this. But like, I'm not an elected official or whatever the fuck. Like, I've not actually done anything to make your quality of life less good. But you, by, you know, however many of you doing this, are actually impacting my quality of life. And that's fucked up. I don't know what that sound is. I can't do anything about it. I don't live here.
Don't worry.
I don't know.
I'm sure it's not important.
I'm like, someone's buzzing. I don't know. What if I just let in a stranger?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Oh, it stopped. Oh.
No, it's still happening. Oh. Who is that? What is that? Oh, okay.
That added a weird level of jeopardy to the podcast.
Yeah. Oh. I'm going to text the person and say, someone is buzzing at the door. Should I get it? Good question. So funny. So I had therapy on Zoom, right? And the guy just stayed downstairs while I was doing my therapy in his room. I do the podcast and it's like, I'm going to give you some space. The fuck?
I want to listen in to the other stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in podcasts.
This, you can, I'm going to go to the gym. I'll give you some space. It's hilarious. God.
Oh, man. What were we talking about before? I can't remember. Oh, yeah.
Well,
the fucking
internet stuff. Yeah, yeah.
That's just a demo.
It is. And it doesn't, like you say, so it doesn't need to be. But it seems to be something, and it does, as I said, it does come up on the podcast a lot with people, and it just seems to be this kind of thing where you're just like, if you're doing anything creative, you're out there in public eye, well, you got to deal with it.
I feel like it's like, I don't know if it's some sick, twisted thing of like, they want to make us pay, or I wonder sometimes as like a young woman and as like a young black woman and young black queer woman in the comedy space, if there are people out there who wish that they had the courage or talent to do what we do, that are like, you have the audacity to go out there and make a living doing this and I don't like you? Yeah. And it's like, you don't have to. And, like, I don't know, if you wanted to be a stand-up and, like, you've never had the courage to go do it, that's not on me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a reflection thing, I think, isn't it? Like, I think if people are tweeting stuff like that, that's not a reflection that they're not in a good space.
Yeah. It's a whole shebang. The internet, yeah. I don't know. God bless it.
Yeah.
As a whole.
Tell us about getting into comedy, because you're from Houston originally.
Yeah, so I'm from Houston, and I was actually studying theater in undergrad in college, and it was so weird, because I think this happens with a lot of like drama programs, where I thought I was bad, but turns out it was bad. And what sucks about also drama programs, when you think you're bad but it's bad, is you go to get better. Anyway, I was in a class, and I was held after class by one of my professors, who was like a hilariously passive-aggressive man. And he was like, hey, I would like you to stop talking in my class, but your comments are hilarious, and I'd like to encourage you to audition for the improv troupe. And because I did audition for the improv troupe, made it in, fun times, and I wasn't getting a lot of affirmation or validation about my acting ability from the program, which we don't even have time to go into it, but let's just say that the chairman is no longer the chairman, and a lot of people like came forward to reveal that he was like misogynist and fat phobic and did quite a few things that were like racially fucked up as well. So it turns out it was actually quite a toxic environment, which is good to know, because now I'm reclaiming my acting ability and trying to like own that at this point. Yeah. But because I wasn't getting a lot of energy or affirmation from my course, I kind of leaned into the comedy group and the joy and fun that we were having there. And after, so I started to get into improv. in like the summertime, I would go back to Houston and take some improv classes, and it was even more fun. And they were like, "We love this kid," and I was like, "I love being loved." I was having a great time. And then after I graduated from college, I didn't have a lot of faith in my abilities as an actor, but I did really enjoy being on stage. So I went to study improv in LA. Luckily, my nana lived there, so I could stay at her house, which was fun because she lived in like a 55 plus community, and I was like the only young Amazing. Person on the grounds.
Awesome.
Incredible, incredible scenes, incredible sights. Studied improv there, started doing stand-up there a bit, and felt very lost and confused about how I was going to survive and make money in this world. So I decided to get a master's in television here in London. And I studied abroad here like 3 years into my undergrad degree. So I knew that I liked this place. I knew that the media scene, I mean, I grew up watching like BBC America with like The Inbetweeners was on it. And I watched a little Doctor Who. It was kind of like a David Tennant episodes. Mm-hmm. And then I think Matt Smith is his name. Mm-hmm. So watched a bit of that, a little bit of Graham Norton sometimes. And so I kind of had an affinity for the culture, and I knew that British media was like nice. And so I thought I would work in television. I thought I was going to work in TV, and I graduated. I was doing some work experience placements. I had this like mentor guy who used to make a lot of TV programs about trains and steam engines and shit. And he helped me to get, I think, a runner job. It was just for like one day, but I now know how annoying, oh, and this sounds so fucked up, but I don't care. I now know how annoying it is when a runner has secret aspirations to have your job.
Yeah.
When they're like, "I will go get you a tea, but actually, I'm a stand-up." And I remember doing the job, and Ramesh was there, and I just remember the internal panic because Ramesh was a vegan and we had to get snacks, and for some reason it was so hard for me to think about what vegan snacks were. Fucking idiot. I was like, "What can he eat?" Oh, and I got him this stuff and I was like, "Are these okay?" And he was just like, "Yeah, they're fine." And I was like, "Whew, I did it." So nonsense. I wasn't very good. I had like a researcher work experience placement, and none of that was like clicking along. But I started to do stand-up here more, and I had on my list of things to do before I left London, before I finished my program and left, to do stand-up at least once while you're in London. That was my intention at one point, was just to do it once. And it's fucking insane that I'm now like a professional comedian person. It's so weird to me. Like, I was so afraid. I was so scared. And I was like, "Hey, scared girl, just do it once before you go." And I had so much fun. And it was through... it was through meeting people who enjoyed my work that then recommended me to do other stuff, like Bisha K. Ali, who's so awesome. I was in this horrible improv troupe. I hope they don't mind me saying. It was so bad. And Bisha was a guest at our show. And she and I kind of clicked. And she was like, "I like you. I'd like to recommend you for like some gigs and stuff, if that's cool." And she recommended me to do like The Guilty Feminist, which has been so lovely. And then also through improv, I met Amy Annette, who's awesome, and recommended me to do other things like host. The first thing I emceed was actually it was like a concert for this great organization called Girls Rock London. And Girls Rock London get like women and non-binary people into music and like teach them how to like play guitar and shit and like form bands and stuff like that. So they were having like a showcase and I hosted that. And Nish, Amy's partner, came and he was like, I fuck with this kid. And, you know, I recently was like opening for him on tour. So it's all been very natural and beautiful. And it wasn't the plan, but it's so much better than the plan because the plan was limited by like my fear and like my limiting beliefs about myself and about what's possible. Like, I love that I'm doing what I'm doing. And I'm so glad. I'm so glad that my plan didn't happen because.
Yeah.
The more I do like TV stuff and I see how fucking boring production, I'm just like, ooh, spreadsheets? No thanks.
Yeah.
That's such a great, it's such a great story. And it's, I'm really glad you shared about the plan not going, not working. Because I think so many people have their plan and if it doesn't work out, they maybe get frustrated with themselves. And it's really beautiful to hear someone talking about the joyous part of the plan not working out. And I guess you were in a mindset or a place where you were open to this other potential path.
Yeah, I think I was just afraid of it and I definitely didn't have the whatever to just like go for it, right? Like I don't think I had the most affirming upbringing. I don't think that my upbringing made me very brave. So every like brave move that I've made, moving to London, even deciding to study theater at college, the anxiety and fear and doubt and cycling through, even moving to LA, like all of these big choices, they took so much energy and courage that I've kind of built this fortitude of courage, I guess, and I'm really grateful for, but I didn't have the balls to be like, I'm going to do that, and it didn't seem safe, and also I'm very anti being a starving artist. I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah.
I'm like, why? So I was like, I'm going to do what I need to do to be able to, like, take care of myself and, like, live a nice life, but I didn't think that what that would be being myself. You know, or working for myself. That's just mad to me.
I was going to say, you obviously saying that those, you had these heightened anxieties, and but you've done all these amazing things, and I guess you can look back and say, look, I've conquered a lot of those moments. But when you're in those moments, what is it, an eternal struggle? When you're like, you obviously just coming to the UK, that's a huge step to do a master's. How was that a long gestation of thinking about that, or was it kind of what, I've just got to do it?
Oh, it's always quite long, quite frankly. I think I'm getting a bit better at it with time. But when I decided to move to LA, that was even tougher because I was like, you're going deeper into the fear of the thing that you're not good at. And I was like, you are good at comedy, you think? And it was just like, how is it going to go? What are the risks? And I used to really struggle with indecision. I still kind of do. The person that I'm dating at the moment, it's so funny, the look in their eyes when they ask me what I want to eat. Because I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea. But I used to really struggle and I'd go back and forth and the fear would be crippling that I'd think about all the options. I'd run through all the options in my head so many times that, you know, it'd be like a week later, a month later, and I've not made a move in any direction. So these leaps of faith, they took and they take so much energy And what I'm learning to do now is to create space to listen to what my intuition and internal guidance is saying. And I'm a spiritual person. Like, I believe that there's like a highest good for like my life. Mm. And I try to align what I do with that highest good and with my idea of like purposes, and sometimes with joy, you know, sometimes you just got to follow the joy. And what do you feel energized about? Like, what are you keen to do? What are you excited to do? So I think now I found a better like guidance system on how to make a move that feels truest to me, but I didn't really know myself then, and so it was hard to stay true to myself because I was like, who is she and why is she always afraid?
Yeah, I think that's really beautiful to hear, and it's true. I think if you can be as true to yourself as possible, I think you get the closest to whatever form of joy means to you, I think. But it's funny you're talking about like choosing meals and stuff, because I'm exactly the same, and my wife is too. So we end up having this weird like choose off thing where neither of us can choose anything. And it's the same with like watching something on Netflix.
Who crumbles first? Who's like, oh, come on.
We both crumble, but no one...
We just have beans on toast.
I'm trying to get better. Again, fifth time this week. I'm trying to get better at making a decision, because I don't know about you guys, but like, how good does it feel in that moment where you aren't sure what to have, and then you go, right, pizza tonight, whatever, pizza. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I feel so... it's really lame. I feel so proud of myself in that moment that I made a choice.
No, I hear you. It's like, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to stop using my brain energy and my emotional energy griping over this. Also, that freedom of going, and do you know what? If I start chewing the pizza and I don't love the pizza, hopefully I will live long enough to have another meal.
Yeah, because that's like in the moment, I weirdly feel like, well, I might never get to make this choice. I might never get to have Thai again. Yeah. I might never make to watch this movie again.
I'll
which
never
is obviously
eat again.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
I'll never return to this restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
Or just that thing, or choosing a movie, you're just kind of like, oh, God, how am I going to spend the next hour and a half of my life?
Exactly. Oh, I'm not even going to watch it anyway. I'm going to be on my phone for most of it, so it doesn't even matter.
What if it's bad? I started leaning into like when movies are bad, and then just like turn it into like a bit of a hate watch where you're just like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, you've got to. I think.
Yeah. Well, we intentionally, my wife really likes Hallmark movies, but I think because they're bad. So we intentionally watch like Hallmark Christmas movies.
Yeah.
And they all follow the exact same format. We know what's going to happen, but
honestly,
they're all terrible. But it's kind of like,
I love going back home. I love going back home to Texas around like Christmas time, because even though I don't go back with my new partner, right, I still feel like I'm in a bit of a Hallmark movie where it's like, oh, she's back from the big town.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you think, you're fancy because you moved to the big town?
Yeah, exactly. We're going to show you how being back here is actually better than everything
else. And what is it you do for a living?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, oh my God, I remember once I was at a restaurant, and someone who worked there was someone that I went to high school with, and I just remember just like hiding from them, and I was like, this is the most like Hallmark movie shit ever. Kima, we didn't know you were bad.
Hiding behind the menu.
Yeah. We heard you live in Europe now.
Yeah.
What are you doing here? Are you sad? Is your career unfulfilling?
Yeah. Are you back for good?
Yeah. And then you're like, no, I can't be back for good. I can never be back. If I'm back for good, I failed. That's fun. That's the plot.
That's and the plot of every single Hallmark movie.
And you got to fall in love with the guy that you didn't give a chance before. Yeah.
Exactly. And there'll be some sort of internal conflict because they will own some business that's taken over your family's farm.
Yep.
And you hate each other.
This is the plot of You've Got Mail, then. It's just the plot of You've Got Mail, basically.
Yeah.
Or like a humble wood chopper, but you're a high powered attorney. And you're like, can I date someone who chops wood?
Our world could never become
one. Can I be with a wood chopper? Maybe I want to chop wood. Maybe I'm tired of legal briefs. Exactly. Oh my God. What picking up an axe feels exhilarating in the snow of my hometown.
I think you've just written the next Hallmark
the next
movie.
Big one. Yeah. The next huge
and
one.
And it would be called something like Chopping for Love or something. Like that.
Yeah. She used to be. Your Honor. Excuse me, Your Honor. Exactly, my client wants to be adjourned for recess. But now she's home. Oh, baby, do you want pancakes? I've never had food this good in the big city.
Exactly.
She thought she was happy until she ran into, hi, do you remember me? I chop wood now. Ooh, he looks so strong chopping that wood. No men like that in the big city. I'm also compassionate.
But initially, it's like, how I hate this guy that chops wood. I can't believe he
does. Yes, yes, wood. She always hates him at the beginning. Yeah.
Oh, God, he's the worst. He chops
you're so
wood.
Sweaty.
He's so sweaty.
Oh, exactly. I bet you can never hold your own at a black tie event. Cut to a fancy party.
He's in his lumberjack shirt. Wow.
He's actually quite a conversationalist.
Oh, he's deeper than I thought.
Oh my gosh.
That's true. Well, that's it. Well, let's draw up a treatment and we'll pitch that.
Yeah.
And
Netflix will love that.
1,000%. Oh, 1,000%. Chopping for love.
Chopping for love.
Chopping for love.
Yeah, next year's hit.
It'd be so good. I can't wait to watch Chopping for Love.
I know. I want to watch Chopping for Love now.
Yeah. And maybe I'll star in it. I'm bold.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Oh, yeah, you're the lead.
I got to attach myself to the treatment. Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm
reclaiming. That's non-negotiable.
Yeah. So you can't have this brilliant idea unless you take me too.
And I'll be like the funny best friend or whatever it is, like the crazy best friend.
Give him a chance.
Yeah.
Come on, it can't be that bad. But you're back in the city, so I check in with you on the phone.
Yeah.
And then you just show up because you could tell I was having a hard time.
Yeah, but in the city, I'm always like walking either into a coffee shop, just got coffee, or walking into an office or out of an office.
Yes.
I'm always walking. Yes. I'm never sat. I'm walking.
You're
walking.
On the move because that's city pace.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's city life.
And then suddenly I'm at the airport in.
Oh, this is right in itself there, isn't it?
Yeah. And you're like, can you pick me up?
Oh my God! And I'm like, they don't have taxis.
What no, Uber?
You pick you up from where?
Yeah, exactly.
Excuse me.
I'm at the airport. Oh man,
it's a great
notes.
Film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait to turn it off halfway through.
Yeah. No, thank you. Yeah. What are you not chopping for love? It's fucked
up.
Oh
man. Kima, it's been an actual joy talking to you. You're so easy to talk to. It's been brilliant. And this is
thank you so much for having me. And like I think what you guys do with this is so nice, so I'm just glad to be a part of it.
Oh well, no, thank you.
Blank pod for life, baby.
Oh, thank you and thank you for being you and being brilliant. Yeah. and coming on. Oh, as well, we
appreciate
love you.
Yeah. Oh, can I please plug my baby?
Yes, absolutely.
Of course, yes.
Thank you so much. So, since 2018, I put on this comedy show called the Femmes of Color Comedy Club, and we platform like women and non-binary and trans masculine comedians of color, basically comedians of color who aren't cis men. And we took a break during the pandemic, and I needed to like focus on my own career and shit. But I knew that I wanted to bring it back because the community that I've been able to create by doing it was so beautiful, and also like the beauty and community within, like amongst the comedians, like people that are sometimes tokenized so much that they never get to work together. Like recently we had Shazia Mirza and Ria Lina on, and they were saying that for the first however many years of their career, like, they never worked together because what are you going to have more than one woman on? What are you, insane? You'll run out of women that way. And so what I've done recently is launch the Fuck It Up podcast, where we have the, like, live shows and we have comedians do stand-up, but then we sit down and we have a chat with them. And what I've found, which I knew it would do, but what it's doing is giving you an opportunity to understand the minds behind the content a bit better. Mm-hmm. And I find that it quite... it's quite endearing because I had one comic on, Erica Ehler, and I really love her. I love her stuff. It's really, like, edgy and kind of, like, saucy. And we had her on, and people were like, oh, we don't know if we can laugh at this stuff. And then she sat down and spoke a bit, and you could see people just grow to love her. Yeah. And I think we don't get that as comics. Like, people hear us do our spiel. They hear us do our, like, 10 minutes or whatever. But they don't know, like, who we are or what we're about. Yeah, so I'm so glad to be making that. And it's called the Fuck It Up Comedy Club podcast, and it's out on all of the things. It's being co-produced by the Guilty Feminists, so I don't have to worry about fucking the sound up. And yeah, it's been really beautiful. We've got some awesome episodes, and I'm just, like, yeah, really excited to share them and to, like, grow the community. And also for people who don't align with, say, those backgrounds, to be able to, like, hear from other people.
Yeah, you know? It's amazing.
Yeah.
I was going to just quickly ask you, what is it like for the comedians? Obviously, they've performed a set and then they're talking to you. That's must be quite a raw moment for them if they've just been performing.
Yeah. I think it's beautiful. So what we do, we have generally three comedians on each show. So we have all three of those performances. And then I invite them back up to sit down and chat. And for me as the host, it's important that I create an environment off stage and on stage where they feel comfortable, where they feel comfortable to share, but also where they know that, like, I have their back. And I think sometimes it's tricky, especially if on stage you're a character or if you're putting on, like, this kind of a persona or whatever, to figure out, like, who am I when I just chat? Who am I when I sit down and I take off a layer of the performativity? But we're still sat in front of a live audience, so there is this element of silliness and performance. But also, we've had some conversations that have gotten very beautiful and very, like, raw. You know, people talking about divorce, people talking about being diagnosed with autism and coming to have a better understanding of themselves. Like, just really beautiful stuff happening. But also, people talking about fucking. And I just think it's great to have range. It's good to have range.
It sounds amazing. Brilliant. Yeah. And it's great that you're doing it. And when does it start? Did you say when it started?
So our first episode was out on July 12th,
July 12th, 2022.
So we put them out every Tuesday, and I'm excited for next Tuesday's episode. I'm just so glad to be able to share this stuff. I just feel bad for my parents and for everyone's parents, really.
Well, we'll make sure we'll put links and everything in the show notes so people can find it.
Definitely.
But it sounds amazing.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure to speak to you, and thank you so much for giving us your time.
Thanks, Kima.
Thank you. I hope you guys have a beautiful day.
Kima Bob on the Blank Podcast. What a fantastic guest. I like the ones where we get into it quite deep early on.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Sort of means our guest is sort of ready to talk about things and open as well, which is lovely. And
ready to rumble.
Absolutely brilliant. Ready to rumble. I like that. I think it shows that our guests sort of come to the podcast in the right sort of frame of mind. But she's so, I mean, we knew this from meeting her. She's so erudite and intelligent and talks so well. So I knew that, you know, whatever we talked about, it was going to be an interesting episode. And, you know, she's so fun as well. So,
yeah
some lots of great stories in there. You know, fascinating journey of how she got into comedy as well. And now doing some really, really important things as well. So we will do a link to her podcast and projects below in the show notes, of course. But yeah, you know, it took us a while to get Kima on the podcast, but it's been worth the wait.
Oh, absolutely. And they do so much stuff, you know, that's great. Yeah. And it's just brilliant to... yeah, have her on and get to talk to her about what's going on. And yeah, just love it. And big fan of everything they do. And yeah, I hope, onwards and upwards.
Absolutely, yeah. Onwards and upwards for us as well, because we'll be back next week with another episode, of course, on the Blank Podcast. So thank you to Kima. Thank you to our patrons, of course, for their support. Don't forget you can get extra content every week at patreon.com.
It's quite a swift ending, isn't it?
It's a bit, actually, yeah.
Just rattling it out, that Jim. You're like, oh, God, let's get on with it.
I must be in one of those mindsets today where I don't know. What have I got to do? I've got to go to Oxford and do my preview. So
in my mind
and I'm feeling like I need to sort of get ahead with
it. Yeah, just come on, let's rattle it off. Come on, let's...
Well, let me do the Patreon link. So people, in case they're wondering, they want to get extra content from Kima and from all our guests, it's patreon.com, patreon.com/blankpodcast. And that's it. And thank you, Charles, you know, if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be here. So thank you.
What, you mean the podcast or in life?
Yeah, the pod, not in life. I mean, well, I guess in life I'd be here, I'd be somewhere, but I wouldn't be doing...
Yeah, but it's sort of making me out to be some sort of celestial being who's kind of...
Maybe you are.
Created.
Yeah, you are. We didn't know that.
Funny enough, I was at a band practice last night and I started doing some... There's a song that's quite... it's called Moon, and it's quite... it is quite celestial. And I started doing this backing vocal. And I don't normally do singing very much. And it was quite out-of-body... It was like an out-of-body experience.
Oh, wow.
It was quite... I was hitting some quite weird notes.
I want to hear what that sounds like.
I'm not going to demonstrate, because I don't think our listeners want to hear it. Luckily, it was kind of very low in the mix.
Right. I feel like they probably do, but I understand this maybe isn't the environment where
I don't know if I
last night.
So. Yeah, I'd have to get my guitar out and hit the note, because that was another thing. I couldn't do it unless I heard that first note. So demonstrating it without any music was very difficult. Yeah.
Can you mix it and send it to me on WhatsApp?
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Cool.
It's quite weird.
I like weird. Weird's good. Weird is good.
Anyway, so I did feel quite... I've used the word again, celestial, because I felt a little celestial in that moment.
That's good. It's good to feel celestial. That's a good feeling, surely.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, we hope our listeners have a celestial...
We hope you'll feel very celestial after listening
to
this podcast.
We hope you hit the weird notes during the week, because we're back next week. Another episode, of course, in the Blank Podcast. But until then... Stay celestial, everybody. And we'll see you next week.
Stay celestial.
Stay celestial. I should get that up on a t-shirt. Yeah. Anyway, have a great week. Take care of yourselves, and we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Media Podcast.